To order, it is 1:07 p.m. on Wednesday, March 7, 2018. Before we begin, I want to thank Martha Moore, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Kelsey Goodell from Juno LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Eastman, Representative Kopp, Representative Reinbold, Representative Stutz, my Vice Chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, and myself, Representative Clayman. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first and only order of business today is House Bill 57, Criminal History Check, State Employees and Contractors, sponsored by the House Rules Committee at the request of the Governor. This is the first hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. Here to introduce the bill is Genevieve Wojcik. I'll take that back. Brandon Spanos. From the Department of Revenue, if you could please come forward and identify yourself for the record, and then you can begin your presentation. As is the custom in this committee, we get the full presentation before we get to questions. And I would note for members of the committee that the governor's office is delinquent on getting both new fiscal notes in. I'm hoping to get those before the end of the hearing today. It's in the realm that we may take a 30 or 45 minute recess to the call of the chair so we can get those fiscal notes. You've got one fiscal note, but there's a second one still to come, which is why you only see one. Just to give you the heads up, though, that I'm hoping to move along on this today, but we do need that last fiscal note. If you want to, Mr. Spanos, if you want to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Brandon Spanos, Department of Revenue, Tax Division. I'm the Deputy Director. And I may have heard incorrectly, but I did you know that it was HB 219?
I think you're right. It is HB 219, and we just had a little bump in our script. Sometimes I'm so good at reading the script, I see the heading and I read the lines, and you are correct. It is House Bill 219.
I want to make sure I'm testifying on the right one.
And it is not criminal history. Is it criminal history check?
State employees. Criminal history
check. We've got the right topic, just the wrong number. Okay.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, the it's a pretty short bill and straightforward. If it's the will of the committee, I'll go through a sectional analysis.
And I note Representative Ledoux has also joined us. Continue.
So, Section 1, it amends AS 1262-400 by adding a new section, and this would require an agency to submit the fingerprints of current and prospective employees and contractors whose job duties require access to federal tax information, as defined in AS 3955-15-E3 and 3630-960-D3, to the Department of Public Safety for submission to the Federal Bureau of Investigation to obtain a criminal history record, and it defines agency, employee, and contractor. Section 2 amends AS 3630 by adding a new section. This section establishes state personnel procedures for obtaining and submitting fingerprints for current or prospective contractors if the contract with the state requires access to federal tax information. It also defines agency, contractor, and federal tax information. Section 3 amends AS 39 by adding a new chapter. This new chapter addresses state personnel procedures related to federal tax information. It adds AS 3955-010. This section explains the purpose of the chapter: to establish procedures to safeguard federal tax information, which will apply to current or prospective state employees whose job duties require access to the federal tax information. It also adds AS 3955-015, and this section requires current or prospective state employees whose job duties require access to federal tax information to provide information to an agency for a state and national criminal history record check. It defines agency, employee, federal tax information return, and return information. And then Section 4 provides for an effective date of July 1, 2017.
And that probably should be 2018.
Probably should be updated.
Yeah. All right. One quick question I'll ask and then open it to questions from the rest of the committee. Does this require any repeat fingerprinting, or is it a one-time deal?
Mr. Chair, this the requirements come from Publication 1075 that the IRS puts out, and it does require every 10 years for the fingerprints to be redone, or at least a background check to be rerun.
Okay. Questions, Representative Christ Tompkins.
Just wanted to confirm, every 10 years, you said?
Through the chair, Mr. Representative Christ Tompkins, yes, every 10 years.
Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And through the chair. Now, on page 2, line 27, I see that a background investigation under this section is confidential. So what exactly does that mean, confidential, in this context? Obviously, it's serving a purpose of getting information to somebody. Who's getting the information and who's not getting the information?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, the information is confidential, meaning that it can't be given to anyone outside of the individual that ran the background check and to specific agencies that require that information. So, for instance, if it's a tax division employee, the tax division would need to know if there was a crime involving a crime of dishonesty. And so we would know that limited bit of information from the background check in order to verify if the employee should continue working with us or not.
And follow up?
Representative Eastman.
And what about, you know, when the background check turns over information about the fact that, say, an employee or applicant is a serial sexual harasser? What happens in that kind of situation?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, we've written a policy that addresses the crimes that we're concerned with as a division, and CSSD has concern, or child support is concerned with as a division. And so sexual crimes against children would preclude them from getting a job with child support. If it's a general sexual crime, that should be disclosed on their job application. I believe there are some requirements about how recent that was. But we will be verifying that the job application disclosed the information that they were supposed to disclose from what was returned in the criminal history check.
And follow up?
Representative Eastman.
And is that only for new applicants, or are you going to be going back to current employees?
That would be for new applicants. For current employees, if it is within the last 5 or 10 years and is a crime of dishonesty, we'll go back to their application. But if it's outside of that realm, we haven't asked for a detailed criminal history check to be given to us as a division for current employees. We would only see what is one of the crimes that we've identified as something we're concerned with. But for new employees, we would verify that the information they're providing on their application has disclosed all of the crimes.
And follow up?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Well, it seems to me if I was, you know, hiring, I'll say, you know, a state employee, and I have state employees who work under my supervision, I would want to know if they have things that may not fall under, you know, crimes against children, but might still be very relevant to whether I'm putting my other staff at risk of being sexually harassed, for example. And I'm wondering, since the state's already going through the process of paying the fees to have that criminal information gathered, at what point could that information be disclosed to me as a hiring manager or a supervisor that's, you know, investigating a workplace issue, or is it just not available at all?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, it wouldn't be available to it would be available to a hiring manager. It wouldn't be available to a supervisor that's looking at other discipline. And the reason for that was we worked closely with labor relations in developing our procedures, and they were quite explicit that there had to be a job nexus to the crimes that we were looking at and the duties they would be performing on the job. And so while it is a concern that there would be a sexual harassment history, that wasn't specific enough to the job duties that they would be performing with the department for us to put it into the policy for these purposes.
Interesting. Thank you.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. So what departments would be affected by this? What employees of what departments or agencies would be required to submit to these fingerprinting?
Representative Stutes, through the chair, inside of the Department of Revenue, it would affect the Tax Division and Child Support Division, and it also has an effect on in the Department of Labor, unemployment insurance. those are the three agencies that receive federal tax information.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
So did I understand that this would just involve prospective employees?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, no, we would be fingerprinting all of our employees, all of our current employees, and any prospective employees. But the verification that the information on the background check agreed with what they put on their original job application was only for new employees. We weren't going to go and pull all original job applications for our current employees, which in the tax division have been there sometimes 20, 30 years. I'm difficult to find those documents.
I guess I don't understand why, if you've got the information, why you wouldn't just glance at what the people had said when they first got employed.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, if I may clarify, if it's a crime of dishonesty, we're absolutely going back and verifying that they disclosed that or didn't disclose that at the time of hire. If it's any other crime, we're not even notified that showed up on the background for current employees. So, for instance, we've had some employees report when we first started talking about this. We have actually run background checks already on all of our employees. We simply haven't done the fingerprinting portion of it. So we have the policy in place. Backgrounds have been run. Some employees were concerned that they had a DUI on their record, so they came in and talked to us about that. And we noted that we wouldn't be receiving that information from their background check since it wasn't a crime of dishonesty.
Follow up.
So you're doing these background checks on folks, and it only comes back what are crimes of dishonesty?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, it returns all of their criminal history.
Mm-hmm.
However, our criminal investigation unit is the agency that's doing the background check, and so they'll get the full background check. In order to remain impartial and look only at the facts, the agencies that had the employees' background checks run didn't want to know who it was. And all the full history of the criminal history, we simply wanted to look at the facts involving the crimes of dishonesty that they had been convicted of, and determine whether it had a nexus to the job, and whether we would retain or non-retain the employee based on that information.
So just, I mean, so you have this information, you pay for a background check. And it turns out that one of your employees was convicted, let's say, of domestic violence. Let's say they're I don't expect that there are huge numbers of state employees who have done these things. But if you found that somebody had committed murder, you kind of wouldn't want to. I mean, a murder doesn't involve honesty or dishonesty. It could be a very honest murderer. But you wouldn't want to know?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, it's a difficult area, and it's something we certainly discussed a lot. But again, working with labor relations, they were very clear that the crimes that we were choosing to either retain or non-retain an employee had to have a direct nexus with the job duties that they were performing for us.
And Representative,
I can see Representative Kopp wants to answer my question.
Representative Christ Tompkins is next in the queue. I just would note that, as I understand this bill, for these employees to get federal, this is getting driven by federal regulations that essentially say you can't have the federal tax information unless you're doing a certain amount of background checks. So the background check that they're asking for is driven, as I understand it, by the federal regulations that say these are the people that we have problems getting access to the background checks and those who don't. I don't really know how it's being applied, but to add more complexity to the topic, under federal law, unless it's changed, all felonies are considered crimes of dishonesty. So murder under the federal evidence code would be a crime of dishonesty. Under the Alaska evidence code, as ruled by our Supreme Court, a crime of dishonesty is in fact something that you think of as dishonesty. Theft, for example, all theft offenses are crimes of dishonesty. Murder would not necessarily be. So how that gets applied, I don't think Mr. Spanos can probably answer that question, but the topic of what rates as a crime of dishonesty, which sounds like that's what the federal government is most interested in, for them to allow our people to have access to the federal records, is probably driven by the feds and not by our policies. Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Reinbold, you're in the queue after Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. And to confirm one note, you're talking about employees who are already hired, they're already retained. That's correct. So this is simply a question of retention or non-retention.
Through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, that's correct.
Thank you. Just a comment, and just say if I get this wrong. I mean, in the honest murder scenario, I mean, the honest murderer already would have been hired previously by DOR, and so whatever criteria that would have vetted or not vetted the honest or dishonest murderer, in a certain sense, that would be not affected by this bill.
Through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, that's correct. Again, for new hires, we would be verifying that they've fully disclosed on their job application any crimes that needed to be disclosed on their job application. But for current employees, because of the union representation, the fact that they've been with us for a long time and we haven't necessarily had any other issues with them, we didn't want to open the whole can of worms and look at every crime. And specifically, we're told that we couldn't, in fact, look at every crime for retention or non-retention.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to clarify or confirm that. And then my last question, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
Noting on the fiscal note, and apologies if you mentioned this already and I missed it, the sort of legislative history of this policy, and that I noted why this fiscal note differs, blah, blah, blah. This is an updated version of the 2018 legislative session. I also see it was prepared by Greg Cashin, Acting Commissioner of Department of Labor, which was a while ago, and wondering if this has been through the ringer before one or more times.
Through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, this is actually the first hearing that we've had on this bill or on any bill involving fingerprinting for the purpose of background checks for federal tax information.
A quick follow-up.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
With Commissioner Dragas on leave, is that why Greg Cashin is the acting commissioner?
So, through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, I can't speak to that. I believe that was for last session that fiscal note was drafted. We did request hearings last session. There were none that were heard, so this is the first time that the bill is being heard.
Okay. Thanks. That resolves my confusion.
Representative Reinbold.
Thanks. Mr. Chairman, I have like four questions.
You can have all the questions you want.
So, okay, let's
one minute per question.
Let's just basically start out with Governor Walker's letter. Why would he, first of all, just invoke Article 3, Section 18 of the Constitution?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I would have to get back to you on that.
Okay. And then follow up. In the next paragraph down, he talks about all these different reasons, IRS and support services and Bureau of Fiscal Services and Medicare, Medicaid, you know, services. If you can explain why did he invoke all of that information into this in this letter as well.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold. So for the second paragraph, I can speak to the Publication 1075 and Section 26 U.S.C. 6103. Those are basically the IRS's statute and a publication that dictates what the states need to do in order to be compliant with their requirements, part of which is a background check. Further down, the agencies that would be affected are within the Department of Revenue, Treasury, obviously the Internal Revenue Service. And as we go through, the federal tax information directly affects child support, Bureau of Federal Services, Social Security Administration, I'm unfamiliar with. I can't speak to that one. And then for Centers of Medicaid and Medicare, I'm not certain if they receive federal tax information or not, so I would have to get back to you on that as well.
Yeah.
Just as a quick, going back to your first question, Representative Price-Tompkins did some quick research on Article 3, Section 18, if you want to explain why Article 3, Section 18 is referenced in the governor's letter.
Yeah, I represent Reinbold. I just looked it up because I wasn't familiar with the section either. It's the part of the Constitution that allows the governor to submit bills to the legislature.
Okay, thank you.
You can continue with your next question.
Okay, thank you. So I guess I thought it was a fairly simple bill, but the more I look into it and look at this two-page letter that Governor Bill Walker has submitted, and it just keeps going on and on and on about the federal government and IRS and child support services and Medicaid, Medicare, and all. I mean, maybe this is much broader bill than maybe the simple bills are more concerning. But one thing it says at the very first, the line two, it says requires access to federal tax information. It says to certain. I mean, can you just explain the require and the certain?
Sure, Representative Reinbold, through the chair. For in the within the tax division, if you are an employee with us, there are certain jobs that require access to the IRS data in order to fulfill the duties of your job. For instance, if you're auditing a corporation, part of the job would be to verify that the income that they reported to the state matches the income that they reported to the IRS, and so you would pull the federal return and verify that information, and so it's required. I believe Carol Beecher's on the line. She may be able to speak better to child support services, but she's mentioned to me that that their employees are also required as part of their job duties to have access to that federal tax information.
And through the chair,
Representative Reinbold, follow up.
How many people have access to how many people's records?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, we're very strict on who can access what, and we track it all in the system. So there is the potential for a great deal of access, but it's very safeguarded and limited what they can actually view as part of their job duties. There's within the tax division, there's around 100 employees, and child support, there's around 200 employees. So total within the Department of Revenue, about 300 employees have access to federal tax information. And as far as the number of information, it's very voluminous. It would be all of the federal tax information that's provided by Alaskans to the feds, in addition to a great deal more, either potential or other from other states. So if there's a corporate filer that may or may not be filing in Alaska, we would likely have that federal tax information access if we needed to.
So through the chair?
Follow up.
So there's 300 roughly employees that have access to roughly how much data on federal income tax?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, numbers of returns, is that what the question is?
Just any access to federal income tax data, these 300 employees, how many people? Do they have access to tens of thousands of people? I don't know. Do they have all the corporations, all the C corporations, native corporations? I mean, what kind of access do they have?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, there are roughly 400,000 filers in the state of Alaska for federal tax returns. So our employees would have that access to that information. Again, we track it very closely. Currently, there's only about 6 employees that can access that because we're still in the process of setting up the safeguards. That will be expanded to other employees, but the IRS has very strict rules. In fact, they're coming out in May. They'll be auditing us. They're going to ask for all of our records. They'll ask for a record of who accessed it, for what purpose, what was done with the information, where is it stored, was it given to anyone else, was it destroyed. It's very thorough, and we do track and safeguard it very closely. But as far as the database, there's roughly 400 individuals from the state of Alaska, and for corporations, 400,000, excuse me. And then there's about 17,000 corporations that file state returns that we have access to as well.
And just while Representative Reinbold, while you're thinking up on your next question, I would note we now have 4 fiscal notes. I think that's all that we are expecting. The ones you should be looking at all have dates from March of 2018 at the bottom right corner. And so those are the current fiscal notes, and we're not waiting on any additional fiscal notes.
What's that?
There's a fifth fiscal note, but that was issued last year with a 2017 date on it. And I believe that one of these is an update from that last one. Anyway, Representative Reinbold, further follow-up.
Thank you. Okay, so I just want to make sure I've heard all this right. There's roughly 300 employees that have access to 400,000 filers and 17,000 corporations. I know that it's limited now. Is this bill expanding in anything in any way?
Representative Reinbold, no.
And moving on to the next question through the chair, on page 3, line 1 to 2, why would you guys, because they're a contractor, need access to income tax? I mean, why do you guys need that data if they're a contractor with the state?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, we currently have six contractors who are IT developers. They've designed and developed our tax revenue management system, and as part of that, they designed the reports to run for. So, if a corporate auditor wants to run a report on a company and verify their federal tax information, these contractors are the ones that design and develop that report, and may even test that report. And so, they have potential access. They would never go out and look for individual or corporate information, but they may have potential access by developing the reports and testing those reports.
And one final question for right now.
Representative Reinbold.
I had more red flags on this than I thought. The more questions I ask, I think the more concerned I become, because this is a lot. I guess I just had no idea that so many employees had access to so much personal information. I guess that's very concerning to me. Would this help in any way? I guess I'd kind of like a yes or no answer. If, let's say, for any reason we got an income tax here, how would this bill impact that?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, it would become much more useful, the information. So currently, individual income tax information is used for tobacco tax, mining tax, alcohol tax, and some of our other excise taxes. It's quite rare that we do use it, but we have needed it for current address or for mining tax, maybe for their income, because it's a tax based on income. If we had an individual income tax, we would likely design the database to automatically match income reported to Alaska to income reported to the IRS and just flag those that don't match for a review by an examiner or an auditor.
So, to the chair, this would be helpful if the state implemented an income tax.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, the bill actually doesn't help with that. What the bill allows us to do is continue to receive that data. So, in a sense, it's helpful. We can do that now. We already have the FTI. We've had it for years and had access to it. But what the bill does is allows us to continue to have access to it, because the IRS has told all the states that in order to continue to use the federal tax information, they want us to do background checks.
Another follow-up?
This is kind of a new – what is an FTI? How long has the state had it?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, the federal tax information sharing agreements with the state and the federal government goes back for years and years. I would have to research that on when we first received the data. There were a few years where the tax division didn't receive data because we were transitioning to a new system. They had some findings that there were some unsecure computer databases, and rather than fix the old databases, we didn't receive data while we built our new database. We're now in compliance. We received that data, but prior to that, it was years and years.
And I don't know. Well, basically, I'm just so concerned. There's been so many data breaches on our military and everybody. I mean, I just think it's a liability, you know, to have this kind of personal information. You know, the state. There's just been so many data breaches across the nation. Across just one more thing, I don't know how in the world we know that this information is safe, and it's very confidential. So I guess it bothers me.
That's not really a question. I will go to Representative Eastman.
Thank you, and through the chairman. So out of curiosity, is just a, well, I don't know if regular, as an elected Alaskan, is my information going to be available to the division through this sharing arrangement, which I know is already in place?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, if you filed a federal tax return, then yes, that information would be available in our database. If anyone ran that information, they would be subject to discipline because there's no reason for them to be running that. And we would know, and we would see that that information was run, and we would have a serious conversation, and we would be up to and including termination of that employee.
And follow up?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. I have a few more questions. So if someone would be in trouble for using it because there's no reason for them to be using it, why do they have my information in the first place?
Mm-hmm. So through the chair, Representative Eastman, the individual federal tax information, you can't narrow it. You can't say we only want tobacco taxpayer information. You can either choose to receive individual information or not receive that information. And we receive individual information because we have tax types that is very useful for. And I'm speaking only for the tax division. Carol Beecher, of course, working with the child support division, there's far more individuals impacted by this, by having that individual information. So they have the ability to receive money that's due the state through rather than have the federal government issue a refund to that taxpayer. So if they owe child support, it slipped my mind. Anyway, if they owe the anything to the state, then we can garnish that money.
Just by way of example, if, for example, I had a corporation that I was a member of, and so I had a corporate tax return filed with the state, then you would end up looking both at what my corporation filed with the federal government and what I filed with the state government to see if, in fact, those numbers matched up.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. If you were a shareholder in an S corporation, you have a filing requirement with the state and with the federal government, and we could verify that information. It's also quite useful when when we're asked questions by the legislature. So if there was a new tax proposed that involved any sort of income component from individuals, so wage tax and income tax, anything like that, we wouldn't necessarily look at individuals, but we would access that database in order to determine what the revenue impact to the state would be on any sort of new legislation.
And follow up?
Representative Eastman.
And during this period of lapse when the state wasn't getting this information, they didn't have my information, were there any significant harms experienced by the state for not having that information?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, this was at a time when we were designing, developing, testing, and rolling out a new system, and so our auditors were heavily engaged in that process, and we had very, other than our oil and gas production group, which maintained all of their audits current, all of our other audits really did suffer, and therefore I would say that it wasn't a direct result of not having the IRS data. It was as a result of being completely overworked in design, developing, and rolling out a new system. So it wasn't a direct impact.
And follow up?
Representative Eastman.
Through the chair again. Now, you mentioned earlier that this background information is going to be limited to the crimes of dishonesty. What is driving that particular label? Is that simply what the IRS is requiring as an absolute minimum, or how do you get there?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, the IRS requires that we have a policy and that we abide by that policy and that it includes a fingerprint component, but they really left it up to each individual state to draft that policy. So the policy was drafted between the tax division, the Division of Child Support Services, and the criminal investigation unit within the Department of Revenue. And we came up with that determination, working again with labor relations.
And follow?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. Maybe a rare opportunity where the federal government actually expects and invites the states to practice common sense and doesn't give them the play-by-play, which I think may be admirable. But this limitation to crimes of dishonesty doesn't seem to be including that common sense. I mean, I think of here we have federal tax information. We're requiring people to do background checks. But dishonesty seems so very narrow. I mean, what about me honestly, you know, releasing that confidential information when I'm not supposed to? Would that be caught up under your dishonesty provision?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, there's several, a few statutes already in existence that they would be subject to criminal fines and imprisonment. I believe it's $5,000 and up to 3 years in jail for releasing that information. So they wouldn't have a job with us anyway if they were in jail. But certainly disclosing confidential information to someone outside the agency would be dishonest. We do follow that confidentiality very, very strictly. And so I don't know that it was specifically noted in that policy, but we have other policies on confidentiality and breaching that confidentiality, that if you purposefully breached confidentiality, we would certainly push for termination.
And follow up?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, and through the chair. And it may be that you have those policies, but those policies aren't going to be caught up under the background investigation that you're performing. Unless they fall under the criteria that you're setting forth. And you've set the criteria so narrow that if I had been in jail or releasing confidential information and had gotten out and now applied for the job, and, you know, I'm now hired because I said I was never in jail, because I, you know, didn't get zinged for dishonesty, then I guess I fall through the cracks is kind of my conclusion.
Representative Eastman, you should, just to clarify, your statement that a crime involving dishonesty is a very narrow path is simply not true. The crimes that are considered crimes of dishonesty under both Alaska law and federal law are actually quite broad. The crime that you just described in which you were in jail for disclosing confidential information is, in fact, a crime involving dishonesty. So The mere suggestion which you've made that a crime involving dishonesty catches a very narrow number of people is in fact not true, and that having a deal that catches crimes involving dishonesty actually gets a broad swath of people who might not even know their crimes involve dishonesty. But he can answer the question, recognizing that your description of that as a narrow path is actually very inaccurate.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, but that was my question.
Does it get caught up? Representative Eastman, he'll answer the question, and then you can follow up.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, again, our criminal investigation unit is the agency that runs those background checks. They work very closely with both us and the Child Support Services and know what our concerns are, and what we've talked closely about what crimes of dishonesty what that definition is for us, and they certainly would that would be a crime that we would know about. That would show up on the background checks. The criminal investigation unit would notify us, and we would certainly not hire a new employee based on that. And if it was a current employee, we would we have a committee that we would discuss the nature of that and determine whether we were going to retain or not. But if they were in jail for disclosing confidential information, unless there's some, you know, information that I don't know about, we certainly wouldn't retain the employee.
Follow-up? Thank you. Yes, follow-up. And through the chair. So if I, you know, was selling information on the black market that ought not to be on the black market, would that be caught up under your current background check, and you would know about that in the case of a pre-existing employee, and that would trigger some kind of alarm?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, if they were convicted for the crime, absolutely it would show up in the background check, and absolutely that would be something that we would recommend termination for.
Thank you. And follow-up.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Through the chair. And so you've mentioned a couple different times that, you know, you're kind of reticent to go to currently hired employees because, you know, maybe they've been working there for a really long time and nothing's happened, so they kind of, you know, are assumed to be doing okay. But I don't see anything in the language here or that you've said yet that limits that provision to employees who've been there a long time. I mean, if someone's currently going through the hiring process now and gets hired next month, and of course this bill probably won't get signed into law by next month, so they've been working there, say, a month, and now this bill becomes law, are you really going to just set them aside as a pre-existing employee? We're not going to look at that person. I'm thinking of a situation where you have someone who who has had trouble. And
Representative Eastman, you're at your minute, so let's get a question or we're going to move on to the next question.
So someone who's been convicted of, say, sexual harassment, and now they've been on the job for a month, and the state has access
to that information. I'm sorry, I didn't hear a question. Representative Ledoux.
So I'm just curious, since this all seems to be as a result of the federal government, is there anybody online who might be able to tell us whether or not we're going by a definition of honesty, which is the federal definition or the state definition? Because it appears like the federal definition is a lot broader and would probably encompass just about everything. So I just sort of like to hear the answer to that.
Mr. Spanos, do you know the answer?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, the answer is that no, the feds have not dictated what a crime of dishonesty is. In fact, they haven't even noted that our policy should contain that phrase, crimes of dishonesty. That's a phrase we came up with ourselves within the department, and those were the crimes that we were interested in. We didn't want to see again, working with the Department of Labor Relations, they were very concerned with the nexus to the job, that we wouldn't be allowed to terminate an employee based on them having a DUI show up on their criminal history. And so we had to look at certain types of crimes that had that nexus to the job duties, and crimes of dishonesty is that nexus for us. We didn't want employees releasing confidential information. We have cash that we deal with. We didn't want the stealing of the cash. Child support deals with children, so any crimes against children was something else that they're very concerned with.
So what exactly was it that the feds required?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, they required that the states have a policy in place which included doing a background check on their employees and had a fingerprinting as part of that background check. They left it up to the states to determine what crimes they were concerned with.
So,
Representative, I would speculate, he didn't really answer the question, but I would speculate, since it's clearly a state policy and the feds aren't requiring it, I think it's fair to believe that they are applying the Alaska definition of crime involving dishonesty.
I think you're probably right. So if it shows up that somebody has a DUI on their records, but the job application asked for, if you ever been convicted of a crime, and they said no, that doesn't make any difference?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, it would. If they had reported on their job application that they didn't have a criminal history, and then a DUI showed up on their criminal history, then we would interpret that as being dishonest in the job application process.
Okay, thank you very much.
Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Deputy Commissioner?
Deputy Director.
Deputy Director, thank you for being here with us today. So it sounds like what we're doing is we're just mirroring the Security and Exchange Commission requirements for financial advisors, investment planners, and folks like that who deal with tax information. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, that's correct. It's very similar. In fact, there's under the current statutes, there's around 18 agencies that are identified as not agencies, 18 jobs that are identified that require fingerprinting as part of their job duties, and it's the Alaska Bar Association, Board of Governors for the Alaska Bar, the Board of Elections. I apologize, my printout got a little bit jumbled, but there are teachers. There's a whole list of 18 different duties that require a background or fingerprinting. So we're just would be one more in that list.
Thank you.
Follow-up, sure.
So the way I understand this, you're looking at this for revenue personnel because they do tax audits on individuals and corporations. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, that's correct.
Okay, and through the chair.
Follow up.
On labor personnel, because they deal with unemployment insurance matters on businesses and individuals. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Cobb, that's correct.
So everything has a nexus to people who have federal tax information, and that is why the dishonesty issue is so important. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Cobb, that's correct.
So in a thank you, Mr. Chairman. In a background check, if someone had gotten in trouble for release of confidential information, would they be possibly precluded from having an employment position under this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Cobb, yes, they would.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Reinbold.
Thank you. Okay, so I, again, have a list of questions here. First of all, if honesty is so important, why don't you do a lie detector test?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, it didn't cross our minds.
Okay, so you would be amenable to an amendment?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I personally wouldn't be. I could discuss it with the committee that developed the policy, but we could certainly discuss that option. But for us, we didn't. It was really a conviction that we were most interested in, because it's black and white. It's easy to determine that they were found guilty in a court or had pled guilty.
And Representative Reinbold, since you're asking about lie detector tests, Representative Cobb apparently has some information. I'll let him respond to that question, and then we'll come back to your next question. Representative Cobb, about lie detectors.
Representative Reinbold, that's a very good question. So the reason why we can't, there is the Polygraph Protection Act, which protects all state, municipal, and federal employees against polygraph interviews unless you are the subject of a criminal investigation. And then it's confidential. And there's a lot of regulation around that. But every workplace has to have the Polygraph Protection Act. And I'm still a certified expert polygraph examiner with the state and was for more than 11 years. So I can tell you that's why. You have to already be the subject of a criminal investigation to submit to a polygraph. And every employee has a right to just refuse unless they are the focus. They can be asked, not by their employer, but by the investigating agency to submit.
Okay.
And I'll just add it on a practical level. The last time I hired a private polygraph examiner, I didn't like the price. So the notion that if we were going to start polygraphing state employees, the fiscal consequence of doing that, in addition to the federal prohibition, the fiscal consequence of trying to do that would be quite high. And Representative, I've got you in the
queue.
Well,
wait, I haven't finished.
You're next.
Okay.
You're next.
Yeah, okay, because I got
you're
a
still asking questions, but you ask very specific questions
okay,
about
and,
polygraph,
and
he didn't know the answer,
information,
but Representative
even though
knows
it,
the answer.
It's unbelievable that we're going to give people access, or I already given 300 employees access to tax data that they could have a little heyday with and go share with somebody that could cause tremendous harm to a corporation or in an individual, and yet we can't do a lie detector test, and it seems kind of impossible to catch them. So I guess what my question is, can we see the policy, the discipline policy, and how the heck are you going to catch these people?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, absolutely, we can share that that policy. It may already have been shared. We can get some copies made.
We'll get copies made and distribute to the committee.
Okay, so can I continue?
Continue.
Okay, so in regards to several times on page 2, it talks about agency means department, office of the governor, entity, executive branch, university, public or quasi-public corporation, boards, commissions, Alaska Railroad, anyway, all these people. Do any of these people in the office of the governor or the executive branch, the University of Alaska, corporations, boards or commissions, the railroad, do any of them have access to personal tax data?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I believe those are the agencies that are already being fingerprinted, and we're wanting to be added to that list.
Okay, so my question is, do they have access? Does the governor, Walker, anybody in his staff, have access to personal?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, no, they don't. In fact, even within our department, people don't have access. They can't ask us for even the Alaska tax information. We don't share that outside of our agency.
Okay, so only the Division of Finance, is that Division of Revenue?
Department of Revenue, not everyone in the department has access or would be allowed to see it if they asked for it, just within the tax division. And again, there has to be a job-related reason for them to be looking up that information, and within the Department of Child Support. And people have been terminated for looking up information that they had no business to be looking it up.
Okay, so through the chair, I just want to make sure. So this is not expanding any access to the governor's office or executive branch or university or anybody. It's not expanding access to income tax data or corporate tax data to any new people. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. And
Representative Reinbold, I would just note, in the most absolute legal sense, Governor Walker, the entire executive branch works for Governor Walker, and when what the tax division knows as a legal matter, Governor Walker knows too, even if he's not looking at it.
Okay, and I'm just...
That doesn't mean he's going and asking for this information. I think if he asked for the information, he'd run into the same problems. They'd say, why are you asking? And he couldn't ask for information.
Well, exactly. And, you know, the whole thing is there's a lot of people that often listen to these, and they don't necessarily see all the information that we have, and it's over and over and over again. It talks about other agencies. And there's a lot of concern and fears out there, and I think it's important to discuss, you know, the concerns that maybe some of the other people have, but also this contractor. Explain, you said IT people. Who else beside the contractors, what other kind of contractors would possibly gain access?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, currently there are no other contractors that would have access to that data. If in the future we outsourced audits, which some states do, if an auditor were to come and audit a corporation, they would have limited access to that information. We don't foresee that happening. We think that we're doing quite a good job with our current auditors, but that would be a potential. Other than the staff that are designing and developing our IT system, there are no other contractors.
Okay, so this is only limited to potential contractors, only auditors. Is that correct? And it doesn't expand any other people having access to any other data. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, that's correct. Our confidentiality statutes lay out who can view tax information, and that would include federal tax information.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair. Now, the parameters you've set on crimes of dishonesty, would that be wide enough to include theft, or if I had a theft conviction, would that not fall under what you would be alerted to?
Representative Eastman, we've had that discussion already. Theft is a crime of dishonesty. There's no question about it. You can go to another question. He doesn't need to answer that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if this goes into effect and in 10 years we're doing a whole new round of background checks, and I have done something criminal, and now I have a conviction that's new, will you be alerted to that information? Or if it doesn't fall under a crime of dishonesty, will that get, you know, waived off and you won't be alerted?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, just to be clear, the policy is already in effect. We have already done background checks on all of our employees. We just simply haven't done the fingerprinting portion of that, which is the FBI background check. And one employee was already terminated based on that background check being returned. And so the policy is in effect and being followed. However, the fingerprinting we can't do without authorization or authority from the legislature. And I apologize. The question was, within the next 10 years from now, when we run it again, would a new crime show up? Was that the question? I apologize.
Yeah, I'm specifically asking. You've mentioned theft or, you know, dishonesty. You get an alert when that happens. As a state employee, I'm working. I've been there however long. In 10 years, I come up. I get my renewal. Is my domestic violence conviction? Are you alerted to that? Or are you not, because it doesn't fall under your definition of crimes of dishonesty?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, current state policies and rules require an employee to notify their employer within 24 hours of being arrested for or convicted. And so yes, in the next time we run a background check, the criminal investigation unit would check that against the other background check, see what's new, or I suppose that there's just simply dates there and they would see it, and they would ask us, did the employee notify you within the 24-hour requirement? And that would be also an issue of honesty. Did they follow the procedure and come and notify us or not?
And follow up.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And now I can envision, tell me if I'm wrong here, but that a good attorney could probably assess the state as being having some degree of liability if there's something that happens that's criminal in the workplace and you had the opportunity to identify a pattern of behavior through the background information, but because you narrowed the scope, you chose not to act on it or to know about it, could have, but chose not to. Has that been considered? Have attorneys ruled out that the state wouldn't have liability in that kind of situation?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, it was the Department of Labor Relations that told us that we needed to narrow that. And I'm uncertain whether they have the attorneys there or whether they were the attorneys or checked with law. I'd have to follow up on that. But certainly they were concerned with case law that is in existence and jurisprudence, which required that an employee not terminate based on information that they knew from a background check that didn't have direct nexus to their job duties. And so knowing that information and not being able to do anything with it was useless to us, and we didn't want to know that information about our employees if we couldn't act on that information.
Thank you. And follow-up?
A couple more, Representative Eastman. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And has the committee considered a look-back window for relatively new employees who have, less than 5 years, say? Employees who have newly come on, so they probably don't fall under that, been here 20 years, they're fine, they're safe, we have an established record. But new employees of the state don't have that established record. And looking more holistically or comprehensively at that criminal background?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, again, if we can't act on that information, we didn't want to know about it.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
So, can I make a comment here? It will be a short one.
Yeah, I'll fire away.
Okay. I mean, there has been a lot of talk around here about the concerns about a data breach, and I think that's really an important thing to consider because there have been so many data breaches. But I'm not sure that this bill actually adds anything to the possibility that we're going to have a data breach. I think the problem may be that the federal government maybe is handing over information. I mean, the fact that it sounds like you guys have access to everybody in the world or everybody in the United States tax returns, and I'm not really sure why you or anybody else, if somebody is not under a criminal investigation or not specifically applying for a job or something like that, needs, and I mean, this isn't your fault, but I mean that the Fed should be just giving this over. I mean, for example, this relates partially to the Child Support Enforcement Division. Well, if you're a private attorney and you're suing somebody for child support, or there's a divorce action and you're trying to get somebody's tax returns, you can't just press a button on your computer and have access to everybody's tax returns in the United States. You have to go through the discovery process and get them to sign, have a judge compel them in many circumstances, to sign a release to get their tax returns. And the whole idea that, I mean, I sympathize with Representative Reinbold and Representative Eastman and anybody else who has those concerns about a data breach, but it's not really the fault of this bill, and I don't think this bill is going to add to data breaches. It might actually limit it somewhat. But so that's my comment.
Well, since we're sort of shifting into comments, I'm more than happy if you have.
I have questions still.
All right, let me just Representative Kopp's next in the queue. I want to note that Representative Ledoux, I think, is quite accurate. The question about data breaches and the access to the information is something that the government, our government, the state government, has had access to this federal tax information for decades. And whether or not that's a smart policy or not a smart policy, that's really not the question of this bill. The question of this bill is, do we approve this requirement for that should we be allowing them to fingerprint employees as part of adding to their background check, which is the policy that you have in front of you. So what I'm going to actually do, because I don't think the question about data breaches and the overall policy is really the issue that we need to address with this bill, I mean, we can continue questions, but I'm going to limit questions that relate specifically to the issue of fingerprinting and potentially the policy here. But the larger question about why does the federal government have a policy that essentially allows all 50 states to have access to tax information, provided they meet the federal requirements to have those, that's really not the topic that's in front of us. I think we've had a lot of questions about that. I think we've explored that adequately for purposes of deciding on this bill. Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Deputy Director, so for about 23 years, I worked with the Division of Statewide Services Criminal Records and Identification Bureau, and every time we ran a criminal history on anybody, we were subject to an audit. Every year, if I couldn't remember why I ran anybody's criminal history, I was in deep trouble. And a dispatcher didn't own that. It was me. If she ran it for me because I requested it or he ran it for me, I had to say why I ran it. And if the audit failed, it was on me. It could be up to a Class A misdemeanor. For even as a police officer with access to anybody in the country, if I didn't have a criminal case I was working or a very good reason, I was in trouble. I want to know, is that the standard you use in your audits?
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, yes, absolutely. There is an audit of the access to not only federal tax information, but to state tax information. And we are very interested in why somebody is looking that information up. And they must have an audit assigned to them to do that. And there are, for instance, very large oil and gas companies' information that we have in our databases, and we are very concerned when somebody wants to look at that information that doesn't have a reason to be looking at that information, and we have certainly disciplined and terminated for those reasons.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Deputy Director.
Representative Reinbold.
Thank you. So several, one of them is having to do with COP. Do you log everybody? I mean, is there a trigger that everybody who accesses information, it's a flagged?
Representative Reinbold, through the chair, yes. That's the whole system's logged, but specific to federal tax information, it's logged in a specific location, and it's reviewed quarterly.
Okay, so just to continue down that, so for the state tax data, for any federal income tax data, every person that accesses anything, it's all logged.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, yes.
Okay, so in order to continue down this, would you be amenable to amending the bill requiring if a state employee or contractor, whoever else has access, abuse their access? Would you be amenable to saying the person who they access needs to have knowledge or is required to have knowledge of this abuse?
So, Representative Reinbold, this bill only relates to the fingerprinting requirement, and I think that's beyond the scope of the bill, so you'll have to ask a different question.
So he can't answer that question?
Nope.
Wow. So, so we're only allowed to ask about fingerprinting. We can't ask why the governor is wanting to carry this bill now. And is there anybody that you know that is supporting this bill beside, you know, the governor? I mean, is there any type of organizations or anybody who is supporting this? And why now? Why does the governor want this bill now?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, why now? The IRS just finalized their publication 1075 in 2017. And have required the states to be compliant. And the bill was introduced in 2017, so it was very timely. And so that speaks to the now. Are there organizations that are supporting the bill? Not that I'm aware of. I'm also not aware of any organizations that are against the bill.
Okay, so through the chair, this is just one more thing that the federal government wants us to give into. I mean, it just sounds like, I'm so sick of the word federal compliant. It's like, why do we have a state government if all we're doing is rolling over to the federal government? So, I mean, this is just one more thing, it sounds like, the government, you know, that the federal government wants us to do. So basically, it's a request from the federal government.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, yes, through their new publication, it is a requirement in order to continue to receive the data. Now, I will say that the tax division doesn't have to be compliant. However, we want to be compliant. We receive that information and use it in audits. We've brought in quite a bit of revenue from accessing that information, about $2 million a year, just simply by pushing a button.
So through the chair,
Representative Reinbold,
if we become non-compliant and don't pass this bill, basically they just don't get as much access. So we basically protect people's privacy.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, as far as the tax division is concerned, we would have less ability to do our job. As far as child support services is concerned, they wouldn't be able to do their job. And we would lose a significant amount of revenue to state individuals, as well as I think their budget is supported 66% by federal dollars. So it would be a large hit to child support. For the tax division, we already have information. We don't have federal tax information, but we have state tax information, which is just as confidential. The addition to having federal tax information, in my mind, doesn't make it more of a risk. But
and through the chair, I have a question on a piece of paper he just passed out. Okay, so you passed out something, SSR number 45.1.1, background investigations. Correct me if I heard you wrong, but I thought you said that it would only be contractors that did audits that would have access. Is that what I heard you say?
Representative Reinbold, through the chair, you were asking, I believe that question was what contractors have access to federal tax information, and currently it's only IT contractors that have access to that information. And I was expanding that to, if we ever hired other contractors to help with audits, that they would also have access to that information. But currently we don't have any contractors outside of those IT contractors.
Okay, so through the chair.
Representative Reinbold, one more question, and then I'm going to go to Representative Levin.
Okay, because here it says certain Department of Revenue employees, interagency transfers, contractors, subcontractors may have potential access to work with the federal taxpayer information, and it goes on and on. That, I mean, it just seems like there's a whole lot more than just IT and a whole lot more than potentially just an auditor maybe in the future. I mean, if you read your policy. So I just see a conflict here.
Do you have a response to that?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, we drafted the policy trying to cover all our bases for anyone that might need to be on our floor as a contractor, but we certainly limit access to federal tax information. This is a background check policy that would be that is in place regardless of if they have access to federal tax information. So we do have, for instance, contractors on our floor that don't have access to federal tax information that do assist our property tax auditors in their assessments. So they're non-state employees that are there doing assessments. And since they're on our floor, we do a background check on them.
Representative Ledoux.
So just a couple of questions. You mentioned that you had an employee who was terminated for looking up information that he wasn't supposed to look up. And I'm just sort of curious, was he turned over to the police for that too?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I'll defer to Carol Beecher. That was actually child support that had that, and I understand there was more than one employee that was looking up information, and I'm not sure if it was federal tax information or just simply information that they didn't have a need to know.
She's here. I mean, she's online.
Yeah, I'd like the answer to
Ms.
that question.
Ms. Beecher, You thought you were going to get out of this hearing without having to answer any questions, but not quite. Did you hear Representative Ledoux's question about the employees that were dismissed for looking up, or that were looking up information they shouldn't have been?
Yes, I did. And for the record, my name is Carol Beecher. I'm the director of the Alaska Child Support Services Division. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, in the past, and as is generally the case, you don't find out things until after the fact, but we did uncover that employees had been accessing information in our system, and our system includes FTI, federal tax information, as well as other information. We have a way of seeing it, but it's, again, after the fact. When we found this out, and it was a mixture of different information, but it's because we're doing a case management system on a child support case, there's a lot of the information contained on, you know, the pages in our electronic system. They had been accessing this, and we did go through a whole disciplinary process where they were dismissed.
But
the question was whether or not that was reported to the police or the troopers or the prosecutors.
It was not.
Follow up?
Representative Ledoux.
It seems like that would be a fairly serious thing. I'm just sort of curious why it wasn't.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, when we go through a process like that, we're going through, when it gets to that level, we're going through our HR and through the union, and I would have to get back to you on the reporting of it as a crime that would go to the police. I don't know the answer to that.
I actually wouldn't mind if you could get back to me on that.
Okay.
I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you very much. And then I have one more question. And
you get to choose who answers.
They'll get to choose who answers. Okay. So you said that if you didn't have access, if child support didn't have access, they wouldn't be able to get the money. But a private attorney wouldn't have access, and they could get it through the discovery process. So I don't understand why you say that, or at least I understood you to have said, that they wouldn't be able to, you know, prosecute their cases.
It may be more of a Carol Beecher answer. Ms. Beecher, do you want to answer Representative Ledoux's question?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the Child Support Agency does not have access to go look into IRS records. We receive IRS data from our Office of Child Support Enforcement, the federal office. We get it from them for the purposes of federal tax intercept for child support obligations and arrearages. If we wanted a tax return, we would either get it from the client we're administrative, so we don't have the power of an attorney, but should we be in a situation with a lawsuit or something, we would have to go through the same process that any attorney would have to go through to get a tax return. So the tax returns that we have would be things that were provided to us by clients, but the other tax information is part of the federal intercept program that allows us to intercept the tax returns. And this is the reason that Brandon said that the child support is mandated to do that is because as part of our state plan, we're part of the Social Security Act, Part 4D. Under that, we are mandated with our state plan to be able to be part of the federal tax intercept program. And to be compliant with that, clearly we need to be able to get the IRS data. And those intercept funds are considered to be IRS data. We're not even allowed on our statement to indicate that they are IRS intercept funds. We just call them other funds.
Just for a certain clarity, you talk about getting federal tax returns, but really your interest is federal tax refunds, somebody that has filed their taxes getting a bunch of money back. They're a deadbeat dad. There's somebody that hasn't been complying with their child support obligations. you want you this program allows you to seize that tax refund so that the person that's supposed to be getting the money gets it and it doesn't go back to the taxpayer who's not paying their child support in the most simple level.
Chairman, that is correct.
Representative, further follow-up, sorry to interrupt, but she was talking tax returns.
Yes.
I thought they don't care about the returns. They only care about the check.
Correct.
So I'm just curious, how would a private litigant go about intercepting tax refund money?
Through the chair, Representative LaVue, I do not know. I don't believe that would be possible without having a child support, at least for our purposes. It wouldn't be possible without having a child support case with arrearages due.
So in other words, you'd go through the courts?
Through the chair, Representative LaVue, we are an administrative state, so we're not required to go through the courts to intercept a tax refund.
Representative LaVue, I think, and Ms. Beecher will correct me if I'm mistaken, but I think generally if you've got child support arrearages, you don't necessarily need a court order. You just need to get the private lawyer with the child support duty obligation would go to child support enforcement and saying, look, Mr. Smith owes my client $20,000, and they would do their double checking to make sure, in fact, that it was owed, and then they'd go after it. That may have come as a result of a court judgment. It may have come through some other means, but they would then investigate it and then proceed. But I think if it was, say, a civil judgment unrelated to child support, you wouldn't be able to get that same access to the federal tax returns because there's a federal statute that allows access to those funds for child support, but not necessarily for other means. Have I got that right, Ms. Beecher, or am I missing it?
That is correct, and pardon me if I'm not being clear, but there has to be a child support order, Representative LaVue through the chair. There has to be a child support order for us to be able to intercept those funds. So I'm not sure on your question if you're talking about just the private attorney who's working with another client. But even if they were wanting that, they would have to have a child support order, be it court-created or administratively.
Representative, do follow up?
So I'm probably getting way down these rabbit holes.
Forget
it.
Okay. A couple more questions, and then we're going to wind this up. Representative Reinbold.
Okay, so a couple questions. One, you talked about $2 million that excess. Was that all child support money?
Representative Reinbold, through the chair, no, I was speaking only for tax division. I'll let Ms. Beecher speak for child support, but for the tax division, on average, we collect about $2 million in audits that we call piggyback audits. So the federal government has already done an audit. They notify us that they've completed that audit. Income went up by X dollars. We follow it up with a piggyback audit because they owe the state more money as well.
Okay, so this has nothing to do with child support. The $2 million was just taxes from taxpayers.
Representative Reinbold through the chair, correct.
Okay, and second question.
And Representative Reinbold, just for your information, in the letter from Governor Walker on page 2 in the first full paragraph, it references the FY16 Child Support Enforcement Division collected over $8.6 million in past due child support through the Federal Tax Refund Offset Program, and that's in the letter we got from the governor. So the figure from the child support is $8.6 million in FY16.
Thank you for the clarity. And can I continue, please?
Yes.
Okay, so does the state have any database, or is this just all these employees, 300 or whatever it was that you said, just having access to a federal? We don't have any databases ourselves, do we, other than the C Corporation? Or I'm trying to figure out, do we have a database? This is what my question is. And is it linked at all to the Answers database, or is that 100% separate? I'm just trying to figure out where it's stored. Where I'm going with this is data security.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, the database that we have is it's made by a company called Fast Enterprises. It's Gentax is their customized off-the-shelf system. We refer to it as the Tax Revenue Management System, or TRIMS for short, and that's where all of the state tax information as well as the federal tax information for tax division is stored.
And Representative Reinbold, Representative Stutz just reminded me that we really are not going to keep going down the path of the data breaches. There's been no indication that they've had an issue with data breaches from this department. Go ahead with your next question.
Okay, so we're back to the disciplinary thing that you passed out. By the way, it was good that you guys did have that information. And I don't know if you can answer this question or not, but what my question is it sounds like one employee has been terminated because of a child custody or child, you know, payment type situation. And I guess it wasn't turned over. That was Ledoux's question about turned over to the police, that information wasn't. Well, what I'm wondering, is there any history of that anybody has ever gotten a misdemeanor A? I know now under Senate Bill 91, misdemeanor A's are down to 30 days with 9 new ways to get out of jail.
Okay, the question is, has anyone other than the one that was dismissed, anyone been charged with crimes related to data access that was improper?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I would have to get back to you. During my time as deputy director, we have certainly had terminated one individual for breach of confidential information. It wasn't a database breach. It was the individual giving information to individuals who weren't supposed to have that information. And I apologize. It was as related to what did you say it was related to? It wasn't a confidentiality breach. It was, I apologize. I think I went down a different question. But during my time as deputy director, we've terminated at least one employee for releasing confidential information.
And through the chair, where I was going with this is if there's 300 employees that have access, and I don't know, the policy, it looked like it was just put in place February of 2017 from the piece of information I got. It just seems like if so many employees have access, the temptation really could be there to access the data and distribute it, whether they're caught or not. I was just trying to figure out if there was any history of more than just one person being terminated and if there was a misdemeanor A ever,
Representative Reinbold,
in regards to this.
I actually think that both you and Representative Easton have multiple questions on this same topic. I think they've been adequately asked and answered. So I'm going to go to Representative Easton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I want to revisit renewals. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think from earlier conversation, at the point that you reach that 10-year period, somewhere around 10 years from today, let's say, and you're looking back, the background check that you're taking to the national database is going to list any convictions, and you're going to be alerted to those, correct?
Through the chair, Representative.
Representative Eastman, actually, this question has been asked and answered so many times I can't even count them, so no, we're not going to ask this question again.
No,
you better get the other question. We're going to just stop the questions. Go ahead. And I'm really,
Thank you,
we
Mr.
don't
Chair.
Need the repetition.
And so since we're doing that 10-year look back going forwards, wouldn't it be common sense to also do a look back backwards for some, you know, period of time? I think the committee hasn't recommended that, but I'd be very interested to know, you know, why the committee wouldn't want to do at least a 5-year look back. Because right now what I'm gathering from you is that the feds have asked us to do this background check. We're going to do the background check. And if someone lied on their job application last week, which is dishonesty, of course, we really don't want to know about that because they're already an employee and we can't do anything about it. But if it's dishonesty and you're trying to get to things that are dishonesty, wouldn't it make sense to at least look back in the recent history to those employees who aren't established for more than 5 years, for example?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, certainly that's something that we can look at. And again, it's our own agency, criminal investigation unit, that's running this background check. And if a crime showed up for an employee that was just hired last week, they certainly would. I shouldn't say certainly. I believe they would notify us of that, and we would look at their application to verify that it had that information listed. We do try to use common sense in our agency, but to draft a policy on whether we're going to retain or non-retain an employee, we do have to really get down into specifics. This was shared with the unions. They had an opportunity to comment on it. It was finalized. We have done policies related to protecting information, but we've never done a policy on doing a background check. So with it being new, we didn't want to get crossways with unions or with tenured employees, and going back that 15, 20 years ago, they didn't disclose an unrelated crime. And so certainly we are trying to use common sense in this as well.
And last follow-up?
Last question, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And when can the committee look at that and get an answer back to us on where they would like to go with that?
Representative Eastman, actually, this is not about that policy. This is about fingerprinting. We're not revisiting their policy, so I don't really see how that has anything to do with the bill in front of us. Can you explain how that has something to do with the bill in front of us?
Yes, because we are right now going to be paying out of our state general funds to perform these background checks, and I'd like to know that common sense is being applied. I'd like to assume it, but unfortunately, okay. In my job, I can't. So I'd like to know what the answer is.
You've done the best you can, but no, we're spending the money on the background checks already. This just allows us to do the fingerprinting and continue to do the background checks we're already doing. So that brings us next to any further comments with regard. Actually, we need to open the public hearing. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify about House Bill 219? I'm going to open the public hearing. Anyone that wishes to speak on House Bill 219? Hearing and seeing no one, I have no one else online. I'm going to close the public hearing. That brings the bill back before the committee. Is there any further discussion on this bill? I will, as is the practice, limit members to 3 minutes. One time as to House Bill 219.
Are we going to amend it? I mean, when are amendments due?
We're not. We're moving it today.
Well, we never had a chance to amend the bill.
That's true.
Okay, well then.
If you'd like to make comments, I don't see anything. Representative Stutes, comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make this perfectly clear in my own mind. You're not allowing any additional people access to this information. All you're doing is saying we need to fingerprint new employees and current employees. Is that pretty clear what this is all about?
Representative Stutes, through the chair, correct? The bill is only asking for authority to do a fingerprint on background that we already have a policy for.
And it has nothing to do with additional access or where you store your database or anything else along those lines. Is that correct?
Representative Stutes, through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you for that clarification.
Any further comments? Representative Easton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, I do believe it's the custom and practice of this committee to wait until we've heard any public testimony before submitting amendments to alleged legal.
We just didn't hear any public testimony, Representative Easton. What are your comments on the bill?
My comment is that I think it has been our practice to wait to hear testimony, whether it's long, short, or non-existent, before we contact Ledge Legal and discuss amendments. I'd like 24 hours to have that conversation with Ledge Legal concerning an amendment that I'd like to propose.
Let me ask you this, Representative Eastman. Tell me in 1 minute or less, what is the amendment you'd like to propose?
I would like to discuss with Ledge Legal whether or not the laws need an amendment, but I think they might, and so I'd like to have that conversation before bringing something to the committee.
And this bill has been on the committee's agenda since last Friday. What prevented you from doing that in the last several days?
Because there was no deadline for amendments, because we hadn't been able to discuss the bill in committee.
All right. Any further comments on the bill other than the desire to take up amendments?
I have.
Representative Reinbold.
Okay. First of all, this bill, I think, was submitted last year in 2017. He said this is the first hearing. Am I correct?
Representative Reinbold, through the chair, that's correct.
Okay. It's a first hearing, first glance. We've got a whole lot of stuff going on. He couldn't answer a ton of questions that we had. Public testimony was about 15 seconds, which was absolutely ridiculous. We've had not our questions
answered. Representative Reinbold.
There's no opportunity to do
amendments. Representative, just a moment. I understand you have a perspective about the public testimony, but in fact, this hearing has been noted for some time, and not a single member of the public chose to. I want to describe the public ridiculous for not coming and testifying, but I think the public has, by not testifying, indicated that they are comfortable with this bill because this bill has been noticed. Go ahead with your comments.
And Mr. Clement, I don't appreciate you regurgitating things that I never said. I said 15 seconds was a ridiculous amount for public testimony. And I think it's critical. I think the public would want to weigh in this bill, and I think it's important, and I think that they want us as legislators to be doing amendments. We're supposed to be doing the committee process and amendments here.
Representative Reinbold, please direct your comments to the bill and not trying to attack the chair. Go ahead with your comments to the bill, or else I won't allow you to
speak. I have deep concerns with this bill.
Go ahead.
I think this is our first hearing, and I think that it has not been well vetted. I think our questions have not been. I'm very concerned about the number of employees that have access to data. I believe you said 300 people have access to 400,000 taxpayers, and also, I believe there was 4,000 corporations that pay income taxes that they potentially could have access to. I was talking to you carefully about opportunity to amend the bill, and I just do not understand why we're rushing this, cramming this through, you know, right now. I think it's unacceptable. So I will be a no vote moving this out of committee.
And Representative Reinbold, I'm hearing what you're saying, and also reflecting on Representative Eastman's request. I will give all members of the committee until 5 o'clock tomorrow, Thursday, to submit amendments. They need to be submitted by email to my office. If there are no amendments, we will take this up again on – well, we'll take it up again on Friday either way, but any amendments that are received after 5 p.m. will not be accepted. Any further comment? Well, actually, we don't need further comments because we're taking up the bill further. So I will note that one amendment that we will get prepared is an amendment to change the effective date, because the effective date of the bill says July 1st, 2017, and we'll make sure there's an amendment changing the effective date to July 1st, 2018. And with that, we will adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is for Friday, March 9th at 1 p.m., in addition to hearing for the final time House Bill 219, we will hear House Joint Resolution 29, Reauthorized Secure Rural Schools Act, sponsored by Representative Rauscher, and we will stand adjourned. It is 2:40 p.m.